What I want you to see in this introductory material is that the operating agreement, which we start with the premise is so we can develop oil and gas leases, in fact, covers more than just oil and gas leases potentially. It covers fee simple interests, severed working interests. It covers maybe an area of mutual interest agreement. And if you look at the definition of oil and gas, it's not just oil and gas and other hydrocarbons. It's and other marketable substances produced with oil or gas and other hydrocarbons. So what I want to underscore here is just about anything that comes out of the ground within the contract area is going to be subject to the terms of this operating agreement. Okay. So we have broad definitions. I'm going to skip that next definition. I'm going to go, we've got broad definitions and the general practice, though not required, is that the parties, though they may not own their interests equally, they do assume responsibility for costs and they get the right to production equal to their percentage ownership within the contract area. So the parties agree that they're going to pay their proportionate share of the costs and liabilities, and they're going to receive their right to their proportionate share of the production that comes from that property. Okay? Now, what happens if it doesn't work right? What happens if there's a title failure for one of us? Well, the norm in the model form operating agreements, all of them that we typically use in the United States, is individual loss. If you took a lease and contributed it to the operating agreement and that lease fails or you lose it for some reason, you individually bear the loss or you have to cure the problem. And you suffer because you were in control and you didn't control it properly. Article 4B addresses failure of title, and it says if you have a lease and it turns out that your lease isn't a good lease, you got 90 days to replace that lease or to cure the problem, or we're going to lower your percentage ownership interest in the contract area. And we have a similar structure. If you have a good lease that somehow you let terminate, you fail to pay shut-in royalties, something goes wrong and the lease terminates, once again, you have no liability directly to the other owners, but the loss is upon you and your interest in the contract area is adjusted downward. Okay? All other losses are joint losses, and we share them equally. So if somebody is hurt on the contract area and successfully sues, we're going to share those losses equally. They're not individual loss. Likewise, if there's environmental damage, we're going to share those losses equally. We may or may not have rights of action against other people, but the joint loss approach covers everything but bad title and loss of leases. Individual loss covers loss of title and bad leases to start with. Okay. And that's really all there is to an operating agreement, and so you guys can go drink now. Actually, I'm not done. What I want now to do is to turn to some recurring issues. I want to talk to you about some recurring issues in operating agreements, and I'm going to do that in such a way that we're going to look at some other key provisions of the operating agreement and how it works. A little sidebar here, once again, you could do a week seminar on the operating agreement, and when I talk to my students, I don't have five recurring issues. I got 15 or something like that, a whole bunch of them, okay? But what I want to focus with you today on is some really common problems that come up with operating agreements and that will let us focus in on key provisions. And the first one of those is operating liability, okay? Liability for the operator under the operating agreement is very limited. And the reason for that is because the underlying theory is that the operator is not an employee, not an agent for the parties, but the operator is merely a co-owner operating under this contractual co-tenancy as an accommodation to the parties. Now, how did we get there? I mean, that is not intuitive. At least it's not intuitive to me. And to me, the best explanation is that most of the United States was settled with private ownership of minerals being the norm in small tracts of land that ownership over time has been fractionalized as a result of the fact that we never adopted in any of the United States the law of primogeniture, which said that the oldest surviving male inherited everything. So, again, I like to use the example, when Captain King and his wife established the King Ranch, there were two people. There are 500 to 1,000 heirs now to the King Ranch. That's what happens in the United States.